Welcome, friends, to the Enduring Gifts of Marvin Gaye podcast, brought to you by your 26-year listening veteran, Jessica. Join me as we celebrate these enduring gifts, the songs of Marvin Gaye. In each episode, I will share insights about the music and recount life experiences tied to it. I'm hoping to inspire you to take a first or your 500th first listen to these songs that are truly the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye.
Hello. All right. So now we are on the album Here, My Dear. And let's just start from the beginning with this. Like, what is this all about? So I got some insight into what the interviewer meant when she posed the question to Marvin. Like, what has been the lowest point for you in the past however many years, and how she went to 1975, and just, I didn't know what the significance of 1975 was. So where I did, like, just succinctly get some information as to what happened in 1975, again, was in Wikipedia, in the just write up on the album. And it stated that, okay, and I'm going to admit too, I picked up the book and I have been reading for probably the past half hour, and I still didn't get the same information. It's like, how far do I have to read to get this information? So I just now put the book down, because for all of the reading that I just probably read about four chapters, and I still wasn't getting this information. So, there was some little cryptic, like, half of a sentence out of the book that basically explained it. Variety magazine back in those days, in 75, let's call it 75, had a little headline that if authorities could find Marvin Gaye, that he faced two separate 5-day stints in county jail for failing to pay his alimony. And something that I was getting the gist of from just reading about Marvin's relationship with Anna, you know, kind of 1975 and on, was that he was being kind of antagonistic toward her. Like, he just kind of, he was engaging with her, right? Because what happened is that in 1975 is when she served him with the divorce papers. And a part of supposedly what Marvin was saying is that he just stopped paying her, I don't know, they weren't divorced yet, but, you know, just contributing to her cost of living. So hold on really quickly. I just now opened up Wikipedia again, because it did say that I think he actually maybe did. Okay, yep. It's talking about November of 75 is when Anna filed for divorce. So, okay, it says then in September of 1976, a warrant was issued because Marvin had failed to pay alimony. So I don't know if he was arrested, though. Although Marvin talks about it, and I know that it probably covers it in the book. So there was that headline in Variety that, like, if they could catch up with him, he faced, like, these two little 5-day sentences in jail. Hold on. It's got alimony with a little, okay. Alimony is a legal obligation on a person to provide financial, oh darn it, then it took me away from it. But, you know, probably, like, financial support to their spouse before or after marital separation or divorce. Okay. So, because I was like, they weren't divorced yet, so how would he have alimony to have to pay her? But I guess it can happen before you even really get separated or divorced. So, you know, he just kind of, to stand his ground, he decided to stop paying the alimony. Which, how could you turn me into the police, right? That's a line. So I feel like he maybe spent the night in jail or something, or maybe he did do a 5-day stint. I'll have to look that up. That's what I honestly was reading for people, because I was just really trying to get the feel of like, what was this one really bad thing that just set 75 apart as like the beginning of some trials and tribulations for Marvin. And I, like I said, I read for half an hour. I didn't find it. There was that one little headline. So I want to start with a song here, my dear. That is literally the first song on the album. Okay. So let's continue the story, right? So the divorce papers are served in 75 and it doesn't get finalized until, told me this at the top here, 70 recording sessions took place between 77 and 78. Okay. So it was in March of 77 that they came to, okay, the Gay's divorce was finalized in June of 77. And so kind of just, you know, at the end there, I guess it just dragged on and on, you know, like they were just making it difficult for each other. And what they finally landed on was to settle by Marvin paying Anna around $1 million. And Marvin at that point in time did not have the money. You know, it's like, I don't think he had the liquid cash, because what I was reading was it was in those years that he bought this beautiful estate in the Hidden Hills estate, San Fernando Valley in California. And it was just this sprawling, it said it was 5 acres and it had beautiful lush gardens, and he put in hot tubs and saunas and a regulation sized basketball court. And he had like 14 cars, a Mercedes, 1956 classic Mercedes, and just like 14 cars. So, I mean, he was living very opulently, but you know, this was another thing that was discussed in the book. And this would be something a little bit more of the salacious side, but it was a fact. You know, it was during those years too that the cocaine use was becoming very, very expensive, as far as like all of these just over the top expenditures that were, you know, just going out the door. That is one thing, just reading through it, you know, hearing it from multiple different people, it just seems like Marvin, it was like easy come, easy go. And I know people that can be that way. I firsthand personally know people that can be that way. Where it's like they have this mentality, they get a chunk of change, and just because they have this chunk of change now, it's like what they need to do with it is spend it as soon as possible, right? Like, saving $5 of it is not at all a mindset, or like just holding it and looking at it for a little while is not at all a mindset. It's like, because I just got this chunk of change, spend it all as soon as possible. Just so like, and so, you know, I might even have to just be buying all kinds of ridiculous shit just so that I can spend this money. And, it kind of, that's just my take on just kind of, like I said, from looking at that book for just a half an hour here, getting that description from multiple different people, probably about 4 or 5 people were interviewed that were coming back down to Marvin. He just didn't pay attention to that type of stuff, right? It was just like, if it was there, it was to be put out. You know what I mean? Like, let's spend it. So that was just kind of how he was living. Oh, and there was something that Larkin Arnold says that Marvin said to him, you know, when Larkin comes over and signs him and is just coming over to kind of meet him and solidify things over in Belgium. You know, it's something to the effect of like, Marvin, by now you should have like $3 or $4 million, you know, saved into your name. You know what I mean? And Marvin says something to the effect of like, I've had $3 or $4 million 3 or 4 different times in my life. You know what I mean? Like, he was able to make money like that, but he went through it like it was, you know, liquid. Like, it was just, it flowed out. So to come up with liquid $1 million, he wasn't able to do it. But just in order to settle this thing, let's finally just end this thing. Let's make it final. The arrangement was that they could get close to $1 million because what they did is Marvin was needed to do another album. And for another album, he was going to get an advance from Motown for the album. So they start by giving Anna the advance. And then it was like, all right, because I've heard it as $1 million and then I've heard it as 600,000. And I thought in Wikipedia, it was giving me the exact dollar amounts. And now as I'm looking at this, I'm not seeing it again. So hold on. Yeah. So I see too many different numbers floating around, but whatever the dollar amount is that they landed on, it was that it was going to start by Marvin gives his advance for making the record. And then the record goes out and a certain, however much of the sales that was needed to make up the difference, Anna got that. And then whatever was left, Marvin was going to get. Okay. So that's where Hear My Dear comes from, is because it basically is Marvin Gaye's divorce settlement payment to Anna just to get this thing done. It had been dragging out for years, but let's just keep it real and know what the reality of Marvin's life was via, you know, his relationship with Anna. By June of 1977, he has 2 children. Your relation, your marriage has been over, basically, folks and friends, since Just to Keep You Satisfied, right? And that came out in 73. That was like a real-time update, kind of a real-time what was going on in Marvin's life. Jan is literally sitting there in the studio during those recording sessions. And like I said, I don't have it in front of me, but I really do believe that I had heard from her, read from her biography, that she was sitting there in the studio when he was recording Just to Keep You Satisfied. And it was kind of, you know, a little bit awkward for her because, you know, she's seeing his ability to sing and everything. So while on the one hand, like, that's amazing to just be able to witness, you know, it's very clear that the content of the song is very deep and very heavy for him. And it's very much about his marriage and like another relationship. So I will just say that I've always marveled at Marvin's ability to have had that double thing going on, just for how much that was in Anna's face. Do you know what I mean? Like, it kind of goes back to like what I said, kind of cold, right? Like, of course, it's just kind of odd that, you know, Anna takes until 75 to hit him with divorce papers, because by then he's already been totally living and involved with Jan, like, mostly full-time living with Jan, though, you know, still making appearances at home with Anna. It was messy, okay? It was messy. And there's just no judgment around that other than the fact, you know what I mean? That's messiness. That was just a whole bunch of mess. I don't know what a woman's mindset is to be in Anna's position for that. Like, that's a lot. That was Marvin did the most. You know what I'm saying? Marvin did the most before she got to the place of like just filing the paperwork to really make legally this situation match what it physically really was. You know what I mean? It's just, it's an interesting mindset. And there was, I believe it was that documentary on Kello where they were talking to Anna. That is an actually really thorough documentary, because else they talk to Anna, like I said, and she has Marvin III sitting there with her. They talk to Jan. Jan's got both of the babies there with her. They talk to Frankie Gaye, Marvin's brother. They're talking to Odell Brown, Cousart, they have Ritz. I believe they get Larkin Arnold in there too. I mean, so there were just the drummer that played with him. They just really had access to a lot of people in Marvin's life. But I believe it's in that documentary where, again, this is a mindset that it's just, it's a little unique. It's something that I'm not really relating to. If it's not in that documentary, there was
some type of footage that I've seen Anna Gordy Gay
is being interviewed, and you can see her speaking these words, and she's just talking about how attractive Marvin was. And basically, by the time that she stands for Jan coming into the picture, and just that basically her marriage with Marvin became very open, right? That she was down to allow that to happen because of how attractive Marvin was and, you know, his young age, and that she wanted him to fully just be able to experience and indulge in the, you know, consequences of how attractive he was. You know what I mean? Like, she didn't want to restrict him from that and hold him back from that. So she kind of just willingly let him go like that.
You wonder if a statement like that is legitimately the way someone feels.
Or is it a convenient way to kind of save face after the fact? You know what I mean? Because it's just so extraordinary. It's so progressive to really just kind of think that way toward your man in your marriage to your man, that at a certain point, you're just kind of down to primarily let him go, because that is where I just kind of come back to stating the mess of that situation is that, you know, it was widely known that Marvin, you know, if he felt like it though too, he would go and spend time, you know, days, maybe, you know, at a time, back kicking it with Anna and Marvin III. And then, you know, he'd go someplace else, and then, you know, he'd go over and kick it with Jan for a little bit. So, you know, he just really had no restrictions, is definitely what it seems like Marvin's reality was at that point in time. And then according to the biography at some point in what I was just now reading, Marvin says that he kind of was fully aware of the image of himself that he had created by living his life like that, by the point that Jan had the two babies, is like, you know, he was kind of living outside of the law. Like, he was just, he considered himself an outlaw. And of course, probably more of a majority of people that would think kind of negatively toward that than just like, way to go, man. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, outside of the law, like what he was saying, it's just like, he, you know, kind of scandalous, right? It's kind of scandalous. So, but I kind of also just give the impression that he didn't really give two Fs. All right, let's just literally focus on the song Here, comma, My Dear. I just love Marvin's attention to, you know, the punctuation too, because that's exactly, it's like, here, my dear, this is what you get. This is what you asked for. So here it is. This is what you get. And I guess this is kind of like just the entire album. When you think about it, it's very, very, very brave in a way. When you think about this, because when you think about it, it's brave, because honestly, it goes to what Most Def kind of captioned it as, is like, you almost feel like you were overhearing some of Marvin's private mutterings to himself and to, honestly, to what he's giving to Anna. Like, this is very much between the two of them, and it's just kind of really brave to put this out for public consumption, because, you know, I don't know, like, think about your own situation. Me as an example, right? I have the nerve that I get up here and I speak to you guys around the world, right? And but I have restrictions, just because it's like, oh no. And I've explained to you the reason. It's like, because, yeah, I do have this platform or whatever, but I don't need anybody that doesn't need an ego boost from me talking about, you know, too much detail, getting that ego boost, you know? And so therefore, it's like that then dictates that I am not giving a hear my dear dissertation of my personal life involving relationships with people. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah. So it's brave because it's like Marvin, you know, I didn't definitely, when you think about like the gist of this album is that Marvin, he didn't give two F's, but he didn't have them to give. He didn't have any F's to give. I'm going to try and watch my mouth a little bit more. I don't know. I'm just on that right now. Nobody has given me feedback or anything. But I think I am just going to try and watch my mouth a little bit more. You know, if it's, I can't help it. I will say, like, how you guys have heard me talking, I don't script this out. It is on the fly. And I talk to you the way that I talk. I have a sailor's mouth. I've told you that. I get it from my mother. And like I said, there's just some things that are innate. You know, I was not raised by my mom. But there's some things that are innate. But I can try and watch it a little bit. Like, I think if I just put a little focus on trying to watch it, I can say F instead of. So, but yeah, I just really think that Marvin didn't really have two F's to give. He didn't have any more F's to give. Here's a little saying that I love. It's like, fallow is the field in which my F's are grown, dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't have any more F's to give. So when you're at that place, and that's where Marvin was. And that's, I just think it kind of is some bravery because it's like, you know what? Then I'm doing this more for me to speak my truth than inhibiting my expression of my truth because I'm worried about blowing up your ego. Or, you know, the other side of it is, you know, the denial of my truth that could come from you and how you're going to try and play me. If I try and voice my side of the, you know what I mean? So it's like for Marvin to just get into this double album worth of speaking of his truth, it's bold and it's brave. And you and I can now have a conversation about it. You know what I'm saying? So, but at the exact same time, that's why, you know, it's legit is because the content of it is like what Mos Def says, 100%. Conversations that you are just being able to be the fly on the wall of Marvin's like thoughts, you know, that he's just expressing about the situation. But in some places, it literally is conversation to Anna, directly to Anna, none more poignant than the first song on the album, Here, comma, My Dear. And so what I'll do, again, is I'm going to listen to it real time. I'll catch some lyrics. I'll stop and I'll dissect. So here we go. Okay. So literally the opening of the song, I would say that just now listening to that, Marvin sounds a little worn out, I would say. He just sounds a little, he uses the word conceited, and he sounds kind of like he has just kind of gotten to the place where he is conceding. Right off the bat, too, you know what I mean? Like in this day and age, people put their songs out and it can be very clear that the song is a response or the song is talking about stuff that has gone on in their life since the last time you heard about them and they had to get themselves together and now they're coming back out and they're putting out their little statement or whatever. But they don't go so far as to like say this is 100% about so-and-so's name, right? Like they don't go that far, but you just 100% know that's what it is. Marvin just goes, I'm gonna have to say this album is dedicated to you, and we all know exactly who it's for. And you know, he's like, although he may not be happy, and I don't hear the lyric is that although I may not have been happy, or I don't know, it doesn't really sound simply like he just says, although I may not be happy. That's where it, I think, like, by him saying that too, it matches his tone. It matches the way that he is, just the energy that he seems to be in as he is opening this up. And so this is what you want. So I've conceded. And the way that he said, this is what you want. He says that as if it's his belief that this was what it was going to take to satisfy her. This is how much she was asking for. Like, she wanted that. Like, you know what I'm saying? That this is such a unique way to come up with the money, right? And the way that Marvin just said that, like, this is what you wanted, he makes it seem almost as if he's not necessarily happy with having to do this, and that Anna kind of wouldn't have accepted the money other than to have him have to go through the process of creating some art so that he could sell it, so that he could give her the money for it. And it's like, Marvin, I don't necessarily think so. I think she would have took the money and probably would have preferred that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that she necessarily needed this album to be satisfied. Because before I'm going to go further into the song, I will fast forward ahead. Like, I think this is important to put in the beginning here is, okay, now the album is done, right? Marvin's done recording it. It's not out on shelves yet. You and I can't go buy this yet. But he feels like he's done recording it. And so he records this in his Marvin Gaye Studios and on Sunset Boulevard. He's done. He's good with it. Call Anna in to listen to it. And was he there? Look, he wasn't sitting there in the room with her. And I feel like this is definitely from the book. He either wasn't there in the studio, like he left and he let her be there by herself, or he was upstairs in the living quarters part of it. He just didn't come down to be near her. You know, they didn't see each other. Let's put it like that for sure. They did not lay eyes on each other when she came into his studio to have her own private listening session of this album for the first time. And Art Stewart, the engineer that was working with Marvin during the time he had the studio there, is the one that was there with Anna, because he kind of just had to control, you know, I can't remember if it seemed like Art was sitting there with her the whole time, but, you know, we get this feedback that, like, basically Anna just kind of sat there. She sat very still. You know, she didn't really give much expression. She just kept a poker face. She played it cool, right? She sat there and she listened to this from start to finish. It's a double album worth of material that took her some time to do. And Marvin wasn't present. And I don't know, like, how awkward for Art Stewart if he's sitting there next to her the whole time too. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if he got up and just, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go get something to drink or something. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that he had to be sitting there the whole entire time for her to hear this, that he couldn't have given her a little bit of privacy. But anyway, you know, she sits there and she listens to it. And it really was, I do remember, I don't need to pull up the book, I just remember that it was like she sat there, kept a poker face, and did not reveal through facial expressions or a lot of movement, like, her impression of the album. She listened to it, she kept very quiet, and then she left. Well, the result was kind of like immediately, I think, you know, she just reported, like, if she was asked by a reporter or something, that she was considering suing Marvin for, like, breach of privacy. And so then something else that I remember is then, you know, later on, like, her little statement gets put out or whatever, right? And then, so now a reporter has a chance to see Marvin in passing, and they're like, hey, Marvin, you know, your ex-wife says she's thinking of suing you for breach of privacy for what you said in the album. And Marvin's like, really? He's like, I'll have to take another listen to it and see, like, if... So, yeah, it's like for, you know, in this very opening couple of sentences of here, my dear, the song, how Marvin is saying, you know, this is what you wanted. Ooh, you know, and do you, okay, so let's go back to what I say I don't do. I'm not sitting up here giving a dissertation of relationships, because think about being that other person. I wouldn't want anybody to give a dissertation of their relationship with me, you know what I mean? And if they're just kind of going in and it isn't necessarily a bunch of positive stuff, you don't want to just kind of be exposed like that by anybody. So just kind of putting yourself in the position of being the person that is spoken about. You don't, like, could this stay between me and you? Maybe me and you could have that conversation or whatever, but probably I don't even really give a fuck to have that conversation with you either. You know what I mean? And then on top of it, like, I don't need you to go out and make a double record album about it. Like, I don't need that. I don't need a double vinyl, you know, getting your side of our relationship for the world to hear for, you know, life to come. So yeah, it's just like, I don't know if she really wanted it, Marvin. I don't know if like it really had to get to that place. I guess I will say too, because what I was just seeing in Wikipedia is that evidently, like it said, this had been dragging on. And then what Wikipedia was just saying is that finally it was Marvin's lawyer, Curtis Shaw, who I was reading in the book too. You know, they became close. They were friendly. They, you know, Marvin relied on Curtis Shaw for his legal help for years. Starting with this divorce is how Marvin first hired him. And it was stated that Curtis Shaw is the one that just kind of finally brainstormed this idea. So I don't necessarily know that Anna wanted it, Marvin wanted it. I think it was the most tangible way to get the money between the two parties. And I think that is kind of where this came from. But when you just also get the take that Marvin's not really happy, he just seems drained. He seems kind of emotionally exhausted. And he's letting us know that he's conceding. You know, you get the impression that he don't really want to do this either. So it's just kind of, we're kind of just right off the bat knowing we're kind of stepping into a fucked up situation. You know what I mean? And it's like, do I want to be a part of this? Do I need to hear this right now? You know what I'm saying? Like when people are just kind of like going at each other in front of you and you're like, should I leave? You know what I mean? Like, would you guys prefer to be able to, you know, argue with each other without me sitting right here? That's what you kind of are like, what are we in for? What are we strapping in for? Right? Like, buckle your seatbelts, right? So he says, I hope that this is going to make you happy. There's a lot of truth in it, baby. And I think that truth part is very subjective, right? Because it's, what is, you know, this saying of nowadays, living my truth, it's my truth. You know, there's versions of truth, right? There's your version, there's your truth, there's my truth, there's everybody's truth, right? So it definitely seems like truth is subjective. Well, and what do they say too? There's like your side of the story, my side of the story, and then there's the truth, right? Like it's somewhere in the middle. And so definitely a part of what I think Anna's initial criticisms of the project were is that, you know, she didn't feel that Marvin's truth was her truth, or she didn't necessarily like appreciate Marvin's truth. And though when we just get to that topic of Marvin's take that this album is filled with a lot of truth, you know, that's sometimes your shit is messy, right? Like, no judgment to what Marvin's life was. But like I said, it's just like all of the factualities of that. That's just factually equates to the definition of a mess. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not trying to I'm not putting mess as the label on it out of judgment, but it's just like factually that shit was a mess, dude. Do you know what I mean? And so sometimes too, it's like, another part of like why you may just kind of keep your shit to yourself is like sometimes your shit is a lot of mess, dude. And does everybody need to know all of your mess? It's like, if you don't know me like that, you don't necessarily need to know what all of my mess was. You know what I mean? Like, if you weren't knowing me when that shit was going down, you don't need to know about my mess from the past. You know what I mean? Like, I'm keeping it moving and you don't need to know the details of my shit from back then unless you just know the details of my shit from back then because you knew me back then. So, you know, that's another part of this bravery is that Marvin just tells his truth. You know what I mean? Like, I think that as we'll go through this album, we'll see that sometimes his truth is a little spiteful. His truth is a little bit antagonistic. Like, you know, it just kind of seems like that. Prior to this album having to come out to be the final settlement of this divorce, like, he had gotten to some places just, like, intentionally where he said it. He's like, there were some times that he could have played the role of the gentleman, but he chose not to. And you just sometimes, you kind of move forward in that. And I don't know, though. I don't know how much of Marvin's truth coming from that place saying, hey, sometimes I was just, this is me. You know, I was kind of an asshole. I don't necessarily know that we get a whole lot of that from Marvin, you know, that type of self-reflection. But we get kind of Marvin's mindset, kind of what drove him to be in that position and in that behavior of himself. We get what he's saying is like his side of, yeah, maybe there was some asshole moves that were made, but this is where I was coming from. And, you know, this is what I perceive, kind of like how you were attacking me. So I was on the defense. You know what I mean? And I think like that's where for Anna, it gets to be a little bit just like invasion of privacy because, you know, it's a lot. So I love, though, that, okay, and see, I'm reading the lyrics now because I was listening to the song and then I remembered I had this little booklet sitting here. So I'm reading the lyrics and I can almost confirm that these lyrics were not in the vinyl release. And so, you know, I will say when I get my hands on some supposed Marvin Gaye lyrics, 9 times out of 10, I can read this shit and I can tell that is not what he is saying. So I'm reading this right here and it's like, that's not the hell he just says. So hold on. Let me listen to the song and then I will come back. Oh, so yeah. All right. After that little introduction, the very first thing that Marvin Gaye touches on, and I will say, I'm very glad that I just real time now listened to that because I can go back to my very first impression. The very first time that I heard him say this. And it's just beautiful. And you know it's a gift to his son. You know, there's a couple of songs where in Marvin's entire catalog where he is just expressing the love for his children. And that is so beautiful. And that's such a man, right? Like Denzel Washington throws this out. Denzel Washington has all of his little sayings, right? You'll never see a U-Haul attached to a hearse. So that's telling you don't be too focused on material things, right? And then what does he say? Like, any male can make a baby. It takes a man to be a father, right? So there is nothing more a man, the measure of a man, than one that A, takes care of his kids, but B, like, genuinely has a love for his kids. Like, he is about his kids. My dad is that. And so it's just like precious, you know what I mean? To hear it as a fan, but you know that to this day, that's why I just said a couple of minutes ago, like, oh, I don't know if, like, for the rest of life, everybody needs to be able to just hear all of our business like that. You know what I mean? But it is a beautiful thing that Marvin did do and he's given it to Marvin the Third, and he's given it to little Frankie and to Nona. They have the ability to this day to hear their father voice his love for them. And it's just absolutely beautiful what he says. You know what I mean? He starts by saying, and this is where I don't know that I hear the lyric the way that it was written in this book, but he, you know, I don't think that I'll have any regrets. And I hear him saying that things didn't have to be the way they were. So the way that I process that, if I hear Marvin say it like that, is that he doesn't have any regrets with the way that things went down. But the way that it was written is, I don't think I'll have any regrets, but things didn't have to be the way they were. Well, now that's a criticism. And I have never processed listening to this song as if Marvin was singing the word but. I hear him say, I don't have any regrets that things didn't have to be the way they were. Meaning, my interpretation is just that he's saying, you know, things went down the way that they went down, and basically, you know what I'm saying? He doesn't have any regrets for it. He owns it, and he doesn't really hold anything against her either. But then, just like with that sentence said, and this is kind of more Marvin's personality, I just kind of feel, it's like that sentence said, but he's not going to hold back to just go into the next thing. And he's like, you don't have the right to use a son of mine to keep me in line. And so, one thing that is salacious, that is from another biography, and I think I've highly, highly level mentioned this a couple of times. There is some other biographer that did a book on Marvin, and this guy isn't really even a biographer. Like, I think this might be one of the only biographies that he's ever written, actually. I've seen this guy a lot just in other things. And I didn't even know that he had written this book about Marvin until like a long time after. I'm trying to remember like how. Well, yes, I do. The way that I became aware that he had written a book about Marvin was just that it was, you know, part of Googling on Marvin. And it's the fact that this guy decided to write a book on Marvin after Marvin's passed away. So he doesn't have the opportunity to be speaking to Marvin. And he's like going for the tea. Like, he's digging up dirt. You know what I'm saying? Like, he went and did this deep dive dig into stuff that purposefully had never been revealed. And so that supposedly, you know what I mean, that it is a 100% true line when Marvin says, you don't have the right to use a son of mine to keep me in line. And I'm going to leave it at that because, you know what? In anything that, you know, Marvin Gaye signed off on and that Marvin Gaye felt the need for me to know, I don't know that. And like I said, so for that purpose, because I know that like salaciously and scandalously and to like give the tea and scoop up some dirt, that is like the motivation behind that guy's book. I'm not reading it and I don't need to. And like the other thing that I came across, like seeing it available on Amazon or something, and I went into reading people's reviews on this. I've recorded this before, but I don't think that I released it in an episode to you guys yet. So I was just reading the reviews of that guy's book. People that have read it, you know, on Amazon, they leave reviews. And over and over and over again in the reviews, what I got is that throughout this book, this fool is going off so much about R. Kelly. And it's just like, what the fuck are you talking about that clown for when you're writing a book about Marvin Gaye? So yeah, they're 100%. I will not ever be reading that book. But let me just give you a little bit of tea about that too. I know that I've recorded this, but I don't think, like I said, that I gave it to you guys. I was talking about Jan. It was part of the things that I recorded for the Turn On Some Music episode. And so it was when Jan's book was released and she's going around promoting it, right? So she's doing radio shows, she's doing little TV shows, online shows, whatever. And so this was something that I came across on YouTube years and years back, more real time to when that book came out. And she was getting interviewed by some younger black dude. For some little kind of younger demographic, I feel like it might have been an online show. And so she's sitting there in studio with him and he's trying to just ask her stuff about the book. And you can clearly tell, like, Jan has a little bit of an attitude with him just from the beginning. And then somehow this young man, and he's a younger man, like he was way younger, like, and he looked like he was in his late 20s or whatever. And
he's asking her some type of a question, and she kind of took that as an opportunity to just kind of, she went in on this little dude, and she was just telling her, or telling him, this is basically one of the first times that I'm hearing John explain just how, you know, people have not really bothered to actively seek out her side of her story with Marvin Gaye. Basically, you know, prior to her having to take it upon herself to write her own book. And she pointed out specifically this young man, and that I guess this young man had been an assistant to that fool that wrote this other biography on Marvin. And she was just explaining, she was like, for instance, like you know what I mean? She's like, you wrote a whole bunch of stuff about Marvin's life and including me too. And you didn't, I know I wasn't contacted by you guys like one time to actually get some factual information from me about my life that you went out of your way to just go ahead and put. And she put that dude on the spot. And I just remembered he was taken aback by that. She caught him off guard. Like, he didn't act like he had a little attitude. He very much felt, you could tell, like, he was embarrassed. Like, she, like, Jan did not. That's the thing about Jan Gay. I'm going to give it to Jan Gay, you know. And that's why I always just say, like, I'm going to be very accurate about the things that I say. Jan don't take no mess. You know what I'm saying? She ain't. She don't give an F. She has also no F's to give. So, but yeah, she very much let that man know, that young little man know, right there on the spot in the middle of his little interview with her. Which she did not appreciate about this particular book that he had been a part of. And I will say, like, if I got anything out of that fool's response to her, he was definitely trying to deflect and just be like, well, I was just, you know, I wasn't the one that wrote it. I was just doing my job or whatever. And she's like, yeah, whatever, fool. So that's what I'm just saying. Like, this information supposedly that's in that book and that was revealed, and that I would never have needed to know it. I would never have needed to know the information that this man went out of his way to be the first to breaking news. You know what I mean? Just, you need to put out on blast. So that's not cool. You know what I mean? That's not cool. But just, it's exactly in the same realm of what we're talking about here, though. It's like, Marvin did it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think people, like, what I've just been saying, it's like, there's enough self-censorship that you do. Right? Where it's like, you just, some of you make the decision of how much of your business you put out for consumption. And when you look at somebody like Marvin Gaye and you get into the album Here, comma, My Dear, and it is two vinyl records worth of material, a front side and a back side. Is there side A, side B, record one, side A, side B, record two of material? Where Marvin put his business out for public consumption for life. You know what I'm saying? If there manages to be some of Marvin's business that I don't have access to from Marvin, then do you know what? I don't need the access to it. Marvin did not feel the need for me to have access to it. Look at how much of his business he felt that I did have the right to have access to. Respect something. Do you know what I'm saying? Respect something. And that's shame on that man. So his name is Dyson. I do know his name. And so there, shame on you, Dyson. But yes, like, one thing beautifully that Marvin unashamed, unabashedly, you know, just very openly and lovingly is giving is, he says, oh, it's so beautiful. The one thing that he cannot do without is the boy that God gave to both of us. That is the most beautiful. And when you sift through all of this mess, because I've been in some mess. My mess was never this messy. This is some mess. This is some more than Dallas, more than Knott's Landing, more than Falcon Crest. What were the other ones? More than what we had, Knott's Landing, Dynasty. You know what I'm saying? This is more mess. And this was real life. You know what I mean?
But, and that's what is making the need for this project to be happening. And I love that I am paused at a minute and 25 seconds at that very, very beginning part of this project. Marvin is loving on his son, and that's beautiful. That's beautiful. In the midst of all this mess, you know, he's focusing on his baby, and that's beautiful as a father. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's when it's just like, that is a man right there. He feels the need to, if there's one thing that he can't do without, it's his boy. That's just, yes, that is a man. Yes. Okay. So then the very next thing that he gets into is just this extremely between him and Anna. It's like leaving a voicemail for someone that the world also gets to hear. That's all that it's, it feels like that's all that this is. Marvin is talking to Anna. It's the equivalent of he called her and she didn't answer. And so he's got the machine to record into, and he's just happening to put the most beautiful instrumentation, you know, and his vocals to it. But it is 100% her number that he just dialed, her personal voice. You know, it's like, oh, dial 3 for Anna. You know what I mean? And this is exactly just from Marvin to Anna. It's for her. It is for her. You know what I mean? It's like, that's why I'm just like, it is so brave. And it is so personal, right? So if there's anything that we kind of just the most, if you want to just kind of summarize or synopsize the experience of Marvin Gaye, it is real. It is vulnerability. It is soul bearing, right? It is no walls. We think of the I Want You album and those songs that we covered, and the message that I'm telling you is like, he is a man having a grown ass conversation with the grown ass woman. You know what I'm saying? He's just talking to a woman the way he needs to talk to a woman. He ain't calling her a bitch. He ain't calling her a hoe. But is he not having the same type of context of conversation that these crude little thug motherfuckers are trying to spit out nowadays? You know what I'm saying? Like, what was he not still talking to her about? You know what I mean? He was just doing it in taste. No walls, saying exactly what he needed to say to her. And then right here in this album too, it is, that's again, you, it's like, oh, did you need me to step out right now? Like, this is so real. You are so soul bearing right now. You are so just, you're going to let me hear all of the, okay. I'm about to learn from start to finish, you know, what your life has been through the course of this marriage for the past. When did they get married? You know what I mean? Like, I see varying dates on that too. Somewhere I saw 1964, but I think that's even later than when they got married, because I thought that Marvin was 21 when he married Anna. And if he was born in 39, 59, 60, no, he didn't marry her that early. Okay. Maybe he wasn't 21 maybe he met her when he was 21, but he went through, you know, a decade and a half with her, just about. You know what I mean? And so I hear 12 years. And I hear that, and I go by that number because I've told you about my man Cary Grant too. Cary Grant also had a 12-year long marriage. I believe that Marvin and Anna were married for 12 years. And I will say, I'm happy to say, and I'm going to throw this in here really quick. As I was spending that half hour reading through the biography, I came across a line, and I knew that I had seen this somewhere in writing once before. And again, I don't even know where I put the book right now. I don't even care. But in that, trying to just get to a point in reading that book, there was a point in time in 76 when Marvin went over to record the Live at London Palladium album, which he releases right before this album comes out, right? It's the, not right before, but it's the album before this. He's getting written up about over there in England. And one of the reporters that wrote something about him called Marvin the Cary Grant of soul music or something. And I was just like, I knew that once before I had seen somebody just do that for me. And do you see, like, that's like, yes, those are my two men. And somebody said that Marvin Gaye was the Cary Grant of, yes. I was like, that's right. You know what I mean? But anyway, like, I just had to tell you that because I knew I had seen it somewhere before. And I, okay, no, here we go. I found the page. Cary Grant of soul. Yeah. Like the Cary Grant of soul and just as relaxed. So, I mean, if you don't know anything about Cary Grant, you might think about looking into that. I ain't gonna push that on you. Those are two totally... But they are related. Do you know what I'm saying? They're related for me. And they're related by that. Well, I'm like, yes. Nothing finer than the two of them. Sophistication, class, suave. You got your Rico Suave. You know what I mean? Like, they're both just everything. So, if you're looking to, like, let me put it like this. I'm going to say this one thing and I'll leave it at that. If you're looking to explore old movies at all, like, you have not yet done that, you would be safe making sure Cary Grant was in everything that you were starting to look at. Okay. And now I'll keep it moving. But, yeah, it's just like when it comes to Marvin, what we know of him is just these descriptors of how open he was and just truthfully how much his music was about his life. His art was sourced from his life. And that's exactly what this album is. So he's just kind of telling her, you know, he's... Hold on, I'll get these lyrics right here. He's telling her... So here it is, you know, and I hope that you enjoy it, that you reminisce, and that you be happy, that you think about, you know, our kisses and the joy. And so, you know, he seems a little uplifted too. Like, his voice has gotten a little bit more bubbly at the point that he's saying this. But then he's literally going to say the word but. And when you say the word but, right, you're adding on a contradictory statement is coming. So I've paused it at but. And let me see if I notice like a change in the tone of his voice. Hold on. So no, his tone of voice doesn't come down. He stays uplifted. And he just says, you know, there were those moments that were cloudy and gray, but you taught me that that was life. And I get that as like he's almost thanking her. You know what I mean? That, I don't know. It kind of now is coloring my thought process on how he was able to say at the end of Just to Keep You Satisfied is that, oh, well, all we can both try and do is be happy. Maybe that it takes some of the coldness interpretation out of that and replaces it with a keeping it positive, keeping it moving, keeping it, we both still have to be alive. And as long as we both still have to be alive, we owe it to ourselves to be seeking to live this life, you know, with happiness. Correlate that to, you know, there were those times that were cloudy and gray, but you taught me that's life. You know what I mean? Like, life happens. You know what I mean? There's going to be the ups and the downs. He says, may love ever possess you. And that, though, I was making my bed this past weekend. I was taking my sheets out of the dryer and making my bed. And I heard that. And it just, it struck me. And it didn't strike me in a nice way. It was like, oh, may love ever possess you. May peace come into your life. Because it's saying that possibly, you know, peace is not in your life right now. And may love ever possess you. Is it snark? Is it your truth that I don't really appreciate? You know what I mean? Put yourself in the shoes of this is, you're receiving this. He wrote this for you. I don't know why I don't just clearly say that. Like, I didn't clearly enough say that in the keep you, just to keep you satisfied episode, but it's like, put yourself in the shoes of being Anna. Put yourself in the shoes of receiving the song, being the person that is receiving a song like this from someone else. And may love ever possess you. May peace come into your life. Marvin, you don't have another woman and two kids right now. We're not even, this is how we're settling our divorce. You don't have another woman and two kids out of that right now. So that this record is how we're settling our divorce. And you have the nerve to say to me, may love ever possess me and may peace come into my life. Why would it be lacking right now if I need to get there? There's going to be moments like that throughout this album, people, where it's just sometimes you're like, Marvin, we don't have enough of whatever Anna's discrepancies were, what her trespasses were. Something probably had to exist. But I think it goes back to what Marvin says. He knew how he had made this perception of himself as an outlaw. He was outwardly, openly, yes, he sure did have another woman and two kids by the time we're finalizing our divorce. I obviously moved on. I obviously did my thing. I obviously was living life and didn't necessarily have regard for the mess. You know what I mean? But that's what I also just go back to saying, like, I don't know. I don't know what type of a woman you are that you are in a situation like that. I don't know how you're in Anna in a situation like that. That's a lot. That is an awful, awful lot. I'm not able to really relate to it. And I've had a really high threshold of things that I could relate to, but you know, it's a lot. And it's so, you know, that being the case, a wish from you, for me, to ever have love possess me and peace to come into my life, perhaps once this thing is settled up, you know what I mean? Because you certainly could not have been contributing to it lately. You know what I mean? This is kind of, should I leave the room? Do I need to be here? I'm sorry, y'all, because this seems like just between y'all two. No, you know what I'm saying? You got the nerve. You just said that to her. She knows what the fuck you mean by that. She knows if she has some trespasses against you that warrant you speaking your truth like that right now. But just, I'm sorry. Hi, me in the third row right now. With this popcorn, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just saying, I can't even be relating to being no Anna Gay up in this situation. And I wish that my man, you know, after you done put me through all of these changes, got the nerve to say to me that can love ever possess me and peace come into my life. Like, what? Anna was done some dirt. You know what I mean? No matter what Anna did, she was done some dirt. And it's just, this is tea, people. This is tea. It's mess, and it is so real. And it is just like, oh my goodness. So hold on. It's about to wrap up the song here, and let's cap this off. So he says something that there's a thing called euphoric recall. And that is being out of a relationship, right? And you find yourself possibly, if you're experiencing euphoric recall, possibly struggling with being out of that relationship because your mind is kind of being consumed with recalling the good times of that relationship. And if you can get a little bit too consumed with that, if it kind of starts to mount as pressure and you just feel like it's mounting and mounting up, and the most that you recall from that situation is euphoric, it can make it traumatic to not be able to be in the situation anymore, right? And so just some guidance and support, guys, is if you feel that way ever, you know, here is a tactic. Here is a coping mechanism. Take the time, write a list, jot down on that thing every single negative recall moment that there is to gather from that entire situation. Because doesn't it seem like when you're consumed with that euphoric, you can remember the smallest little details? Make the effort to recall the smallest negative experiences as well. And just go through your list at times that you need to, if most definitely it was a toxic situation that you are no longer in. It was a toxic situation that you've managed to extract yourself from. And you just need some reinforcement and some encouragement to yourself of staying that course and that path. That list, rely on it. And it keeps it real. It's a keeping it real balance, because the euphoric recall is not all that there is. Okay. But here's what is a heart-wrenching and beautiful thing, personal, for Anna. So Marvin says, may you always think of me the way that I was. Hold on. What does he say to her exactly? May love ever possess you. May peace come into your life. May you always think of me the way I was. Then he laughs. Then Marvin gives this little laugh that you know Anna was exposed to regularly throughout their relationship. And he's just laughing. He gives this little laugh. And he says, I was your baby. Now, wow, right? Because that is, again, that's, I'm sorry, y'all, do you need the room? Because I can give it to you. You know what I mean? Like, I almost would, maybe sometimes, I think I'm going to be preferring to just give you guys the room. Like, I'm going to excuse myself. You know what I'm saying? Because I was your baby. Gosh, it's these little pet names that we have for each other, right? But it's like, I was your baby. To regurgitate that to the person, and he laughs in this knowing way that it's like, yes, he was her baby. He says that because that is fully what she gave him throughout the course of that relationship. He was her baby, and in the moments of love, right, like, he was her baby. And so in this specific instance, unfortunately, in a situation where no matter what, that person is now no longer here, if in a circumstance like that, you have voice recorded a little moment like that, you would never forget the way that he was, right? You would never allow yourself to forget the way that he was.
So that right there is where takes on a slightly different meaning, and it's so beautiful and real and just, like I said, what this life is full of. Yeah, it's here, comma, my dear. One just take of the sound of this song, according to the list of the players here, what we have coming from Marvin on this project is the vocals, keyboards, and synthesizers. And that's about what this song consists of. Marvin's beautiful harmonies. He's tapping on, and this sounds like an electric keyboard. It's not a piano. It's a plugged in keyboard and some synthesizers. So it kind of just really feels like Marvin was pretty much alone, aside from Art Stewart doing his thing, you know what I mean? Making this introduction to this album. And it's the introduction. Because the, okay. I would say just about the song the most of Marvin Gaye's that I have to know where I'm at. Okay. Like, it's, there's some songs of Marvin where it's like, Marvin, what are you trying to do? You know, I don't have time to fall apart right now. I can't do that right now. I'm at work. I'm, you know, just wherever I'm at, I can't listen to this song right now. Our very next song is the most of all of them, where it's just, I have to be prepared to bawl. And we'll cover that one next. All right, talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Well, friends, that's it for this episode. Did we have fun? I had fun. Subscribe to our show so you never miss the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye. Follow us on Pinterest, pinterest.com/ Marvin Gaye _enduring_gifts. There, we are up to 45,000 views per month. I have thousands of images and videos of Marvin. Also, check out the YouTube channel, Marvin Gaye's Enduring Gifts. I'm building the Song of the Day playlist there. It's my ultimate goal to become your free online Marvin Gaye listening resource. So, as always, we really appreciate your listening support. Give us subscribes, give us likes, and thank you for listening.